This is the Day Zero update for January 10th, 2016. I'm Filippo Genova.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And it's 2016, but if you've been following CES this week, it's starting to look like it might be 1986 or even 1976 with some of the stuff that's coming out. not sure if you caught that, but there's like two vinyl turntables coming out. There's Kodak is bringing back a Super 8 camera for some reason. I don't know. It's like we're in a time warp, either that or they're catering to the hipster market, which is entirely possible. But yeah, it's like it's very interesting to see the kind of stuff that comes out of there. Sometimes it's really innovative, and sometimes it just leaves you going, "What are they thinking?"
There's something about an economic downturn that causes people to start looking backwards.
Yeah, I suppose. Like, but re-releasing outdated technology is just kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
Especially when one of the turntables that's coming out is a new model of the Techniques 1200, which is like one of the most, you know, sought after and iconic turntables ever. So new version of that, you know, that's probably going to sell for a certain crowd.
And then I found out that JNCO jeans are coming back.
Oh.
What?
I really wish we could have just left that in the past.
Not only that, but they're also bringing back the mammoth size.
Oh, dear. Because, yeah.
There is a market.
Yeah, apparently. Yes. Well, there's people that are big enough for it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids, if you don't know what a JNCO jeans is, ask your parents.
Or don't. You might be better off.
Or better yet, wait.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's kind of been my week, just perusing the internet and wondering why. So, I guess we'll get to what we're playing. Like, you want to start us off, Pat?
Not much new here. I'm still just, you know, plugging away at SC, trying to get it finished so I can move on to Cold Steel and, you know, a couple of other games that I've had piling up here over the last couple months.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I went to start playing Rare Replay again because it's awesome. You know, went through Battletoads Arcade again and was pleased to see that they fixed the sound issue in that one. So
that's nice. Good.
Yeah. Everything doesn't sound like it's on helium anymore, so that's good. Been playing that. Been playing Rock Band 4, as always. Played a little bit more Axiom Verge because that game is just really good and it's just fun to restart it sometimes.
Yeah, I'm going to be going back to that one here pretty soon.
Yeah, really, really fun. And this week I've got Guitar Hero Live ordered, so I should get that Tuesday, and I'll be playing that this week. So I expect a review of that probably Friday, or at least in time for next week's show, assuming it arrives on Tuesday when it says it's going to Amazon.
Definitely be interested to hear what you think of that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to trying it. I mean, the concept is interesting. Just want to see how they executed it. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as usual, I am still playing Xenoblade, but not as much as I had been because I got Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, Bloodborne. I think I am finally sort of getting hang of sort of the rhythm of the game because, you know, the thing about not just Bloodborne, pretty much every game by From Software is that you kind of have to unlearn everything you know about action games you've played over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
Because they're very methodical and they, you know, it's not a game that, you know, these games don't cheat. You know, they follow their own rules. They don't cheat, but they are quite difficult.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, Bloodborne might actually be harder than Dark Souls is because I know I've said this before, you know, in Dark Souls, you're sort of, it's mostly about the defensive, you know?
Yeah.
You got a shield and you're trying to protect yourself and fend off attacks and waiting for a point to strike. But the thing is with Bloodborne, you don't have anything that can be considered defensive. You know, the whole game is actually very much based around offensive combat. You know, you're basically, you got to, you know, when you've got an opening, you need to strike, and you need to strike right then.
Yeah.
Also, there really is nothing like just the pure and utter dread that this game instills in you when you go around every single corner.
Yeah.
I mean, all of From Software's games are like that, but there is nothing like slowly creeping into a dark, candle-lit room with just these random hissing noises in the background that you have no idea where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
One thing I'll point out, since you got a PS4, and this is something that they might not have known, if you have a pair of headphones, you can actually plug those into the controller. And
yep.
Route your audio through that, and yeah, a lot more fun things happen that way, because then you get some spatial awareness.
Oh, yeah.
Which, in the case of Bloodborne, might actually be a bad thing.
Yeah. You probably won't sleep for about a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did that. Also, because of a suggestion of a friend, I've taken up, started playing Fallen London / Sunless Sea. Now, these are both two different games, but they're both highly interconnected with each other. They're both by Fail Better Games. Fallen London is actually a free-to-play browser, sort of choose-your-own-adventure type game that takes place in this sort of world where Queen Victoria, in order to get out of some sort of Faustian pact, ends up makes some sort of deal with, you know, the powers on the other side. And because of this, the entire city of London sinks about 15 or so kilometers underground into this dark sort of Lovecraftian underworld. And it sounds dark and mysterious, but it's actually, the thing is, it's also really, really funny. It's got this really dry sort of Victorian British humor.
Yeah.
That you'd expect. And like I said, Fallen London is a choose your own adventure, sort of like a game online game book type of thing. So, you know, you can sort of develop your own character and then go out, and then you'll get like storylines and stuff and get all sorts of items and stuff like that. Sunless Sea, on the other hand, takes place in the same world, but instead of hanging around London, you actually go out into what they call the Unterseen, which is the big dark ocean that's in this Lovecraftian underworld that you can go out and explore. It's basically a roguelike, and you are a captain of this steam or coal powered boat that goes out into the sea. And you know, it's very slow but very methodical and eerie and amazingly kind of has a feeling of dread, despite also being really, really funny at the same time.
Yeah.
I actually highly recommend both of them, but understand both games are very much interconnected. Stuff that you do in Fallen London can carry over into Sunless Sea, and things that you find in Sunless Sea can also aid you in Fallen London. So
it's not like a case of playing one and then playing the other. It's like playing them both at the same time, actually interacting.
More or less, yeah.
It's actually really cool.
It is interesting.
These also have to be probably the best written games I've ever played, too. I mean, it's got some incredible writing. You know, with these, maybe the exception of Undertale. But yeah. Undertale is exceptional. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's been me.
Cool. How about you, Teresa?
I've been playing Fantasy Life.
Okay.
And yeah, it's one of those where that is all you do. And it's a lot of fun so far. I'm about 30 hours in and hoping to finish by the end of the month. So yeah. At least with the main storyline. Yeah, I know. I shouldn't rush it, but I think I'm going to. The jobs are really great. The crafting I appreciate a lot. It's almost like the best parts of Final Fantasy XI minus playing with your friends.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty cool. And when I realized that there was another city, I was like, what? Are they fitting this all into a little 3DS game? And then I had another surprise waiting for me after that. it's been a lot of fun. I don't know how I missed it last year. Well, I mean, I was aware of it. I guess I was just too busy with Animal Crossing or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty good. And I kind of have to wait until overnight to play it because my kid keeps playing it. Every time I put down my 3DS, I'm saving your game. I'm going to play. And I'm like, no. So, yeah, I think he's probably about 50 hours in.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know. Mm. I know. we probably should have gotten two cartridges.
Yeah.
but it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it. And I'm not even thinking about what I'm going to move on to once I'm done playing this.
Yeah, so you can see yourself playing that for a little while. So
I think that I could possibly get more than 100 hours out of this one.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, Fantasy Life. I know that Chris has been playing a crap ton of that game. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think he's like past the 250 hour mark in that one. So.
Oh, well, tell me.
Oh, that one gulped him up.
Yeah. So, so yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of gameplay to be had in there. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and the writing is where they did the localization is just it's witty. I enjoy it, although on the other hand, I'm kind of like trying to press A just to skip through it, and I have to restrain myself and actually read what they're saying because
yeah.
It is it's amusing.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, so with that yeah, so you guys remember last week we did our kind of predictions and. What we were looking forward to, and one of the games I was most looking forward to was Scalebound.
Which is the action RPG from Platinum.
Yeah, on the Xbox One, where you have a smart-ass dragon with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not playing that this year.
Nope.
What?
We were always like, oh, man, I can't wait to play this game in 2016, and wow, that didn't last long.
Yeah, 3 days into 2016, it's like, nope, not happening. So that's no longer a thing, but... Fortunately, there's quite a few other very good games coming out in 2016.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to have a shortage of really good games to play, but we're just not going to be playing Scalebound. So
yeah,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
yeah, not a whole lot to say there. We're all disappointed. Yeah,
it'll be better for it.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, we kind of saw what happens when Platinum has to rush with Transformers Devastation. So yeah,
not to mention that Legend of Korra game.
Yeah,
which we shall never speak of again.
Yeah, so give them the time that they actually need, and the games will be better for it. Yeah, so here's that. So we got some news on the Killer Instinct front. Finally, Kim Woo and Tusk have been confirmed outright by Iron Galaxy. So yeah,
and their day and date for the launch of season 3 in March.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that pretty much fills out the original roster.
Yep.
So,
pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Trying to think, apart from, Idol and that other dude.
Yeah, who are really super cheap anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They talked about that. Idol in particular, they said it would be really difficult to bring him into this version of KI just because in the original game he basically only had 3 moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean they could do it, but it would take a significant refactoring to
it would take a serious overhaul and a lot of imagination. Not to say they're lacking in that department, but it sounds like they're angling to go in a different direction altogether.
Yeah. And let's be honest, he wasn't really the greatest character anyway, so
right. Nah.
Yeah, it's not really going to be a huge loss.
And then, the other guy, I mean, you actually had to uppercut him to beat him.
Yeah, that was pretty much the only way you could win. So that was not fun. Yeah. I have KI Gold, so on the Rare Replay. And God, that game has not aged well.
It hadn't aged well when it came out.
It's true.
Yeah. Now it's just like, oh my God. We thought this was great back then, apparently. Not entirely sure why. Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
We've got KI2 as part of the Ultra Edition, right?
Yeah.
Season 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, the freaking Killer Instinct port for the SNES looked better.
Yeah. And that was, like, missing, like, 90% of the animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a thing. Yeah, so good news for KI. I mean, season 3 is coming out in March. Wonder what kind of a perk they're going to have for the Ultra Edition, you know, of that one. Because, yeah, we're all getting that. It's really weird because, like, KI is the only fighting game that I have actually bought every season pass.
And well worth it, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been constantly improving that game. Like, they got a really interesting ghost system now, so... I don't know if you check that out yet, but it's actually really fun. So you can actually have your ghost go out online and like earn credits for you. So really fun. Yeah. Anyways, on to Nintendo related news. There's been rumors of a 2016 NX launch, but looks like Kimishima is saying, you know, that's probably not going to happen as the system is still in really active development. As you pointed out, does this surprise you guys?
No,
not really.
Not really. No.
I think they've got enough firepower on board to power the Wii U through 2016 by itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Mario
just based
Maker
on what
gave
we know now,
up.
There's still E3 we can get through, and who knows what we're going to find out there.
Yeah. Mario Maker gave them a serious shot in the arm, so...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And Amiibo set the world on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and Nintendo's not a company that, you know, is overly concerned with quarterly growth.
Yeah.
Mm. That's kind of the difference between U.S. companies and Japanese companies. They'll play the long game for something as opposed to Americans, which... They have to have growth every 3 months or everything is a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too true.
Yeah. And so what do you guys think of this thing that the NX will be a hybrid console / handheld type thing?
If it goes sounds like perfect. How I think, yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
If it works out, it'll be a game changer.
Yeah.
So I've talked about this before on the show, but I'm really opposed to the mentality that console games and handheld games have to be fundamentally different just based on the platforms they appear on. So if Nintendo wants to push out a system that erases that line and basically gives us a console and a handheld option for the same platform, that's ideal to me as long as it's playing host to the right games.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at what Nintendo's been doing on their handheld side of things for the last several years now, if they draw more influence than that from the console side, then this could be one of their best platforms ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, what I want to see is if they're going to do it, I would kind of like it to be both a console and a handheld.
Yes.
You know, to give you the option to buy either.
Or both.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, for me, handhelds are pretty much useless. So that's one of the reasons I still haven't gotten a Wii U, because that's, you know, gamepad is like just not really very useful for me.
See, and it's a lifesaver in our place, because most of the games we can play on the little VMU thing or whatever it is,
yeah,
and walk away and let somebody else use the TV.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm assuming that most people have more than one TV in their home.
Yeah, a lot of people have more than one.
You know what? I stand by the decision of people who want to spend their entire wad on a big freaking TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of in the market for a new TV at the moment myself. But
every day you wait, it gets better and better.
Yeah.
That's the bad thing.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, it's like right now I could probably get for like under $1,000 and get a 4K TV. It's like,
yeah. you can.
It's getting stupid ridiculous. Yeah. But I would like to just have the option to buy an NX console and just play my games on that. I can see the appeal of someone having both, you know, like playing their game on the console and then just warping their save game up to the handheld and taking off and playing on the bus. And then when they get back home, just zapping it back and continue on. So there's definitely appeal there. There's definitely use cases for it, but I'm not really that use case. So hopefully they'll remember that people like me actually exist. So that will be what I would like.
Well, knowing their history, they know that they have handheld people. They know they have console people. They know there's overlap. I feel like they will probably accommodate you.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the Wii U, they kind of went too far in that one direction. And, getting the sense that the whole Wii U gamepad idea didn't really pan out as well as they would have hoped it did.
Yeah. And Kimishima was fervently opposed to it.
Yeah.
Know that.
Yeah. So that may be why it's gone back into development, as it were. So we'll have to wait and see on that. So we got some Oculus Rift news. If you're looking to spend some money, you can buy the Oculus Rift for $600.
You got to say it right. It's $599 American dollars.
American. Not that crappy Canadian currency. Yeah, that'd be.
That was the first thing I thought of when that price point was announced, but maybe the PC market will take it better.
Yeah.
I saw a little buzz about it on Reddit, and the PC market did not seem to be taking it very well.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that whole, if you follow the PC Master Race Reddit, basically they don't take anything well, so it doesn't really matter.
That is,
you know,
true.
It'll be something about that,
and then the price point, and then they'll throw in something about a Jewish conspiracy or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could say that the Oculus Rift comes with a free kitten, and they'll probably, have to find some reason to complain about that. So.
Well, they're allergic, don't you?
You will want to take out a second job so you can own one of these.
Yeah, but, you know, to be brutally honest, I don't really mind that price point, because it puts it at an aspirational value right now. It's going to get the people who are really, really serious about it into it. You know, these are the guys who will spend $700 on a graphics card and not even blink. So, you know, these are the folks you want to get in early, because these are also the folks who are usually going to be developing the new experiences, or going to be, you know, basically trying to shepherd the platform forward. There's going to be trickle down as we, you know, as time goes by and things get more and more affordable, then it's going to go mainstream. So,
yeah.
It kind of sucks that I might not be able to get one this year, but, you know, maybe if I forego the new TV and save up a little, I could probably manage it. So, I mean, I've got the PC configuration to handle it, so might be something to look forward to.
Yeah.
It doesn't really bother me so much either, but that was because I knew I was going to be going all in on the PlayStation VR anyway.
Yeah.
And that the Oculus Rift was going to be something for the, you know, for the long term, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. You know, on a slightly related note, if you were one of the people who backed the original Oculus Rift development kit on Kickstarter, and you got one of those, they're going to be sending you the full retail version for free. So that's a nice way of handling the launch of that one.
And how much did they pay?
They paid $250 to $350, I think, was the tiers to get it.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're going to be taking a loss on that.
Getting a good deal.
Getting a good deal and getting some goodwill out there. So, you know, it makes sense. And I cannot wait for that, honestly. You know, if I have to buy one headset, it's probably going to be the Oculus Rift. Honestly, I would rather tie myself to the one that has the most powerful platform behind it. as much as the PlayStation VR is going to be pretty cool, it's still limited by the PS4. And, yeah. And all of the constraints that entails.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's going to be a lot more freedom, a lot more independent stuff going on the PC. And I think, that's the direction that I'm probably going to go. Either of you guys, like, or going to be picking one up, or?
Not for a while.
Yeah. Not even in the cards.
You said, it's an aspirational thing. I think once I try the PlayStation VR and I get my foot in that door, it'll depend on how I take to that, and then how money treats me over the next year or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that in mind, we also don't have any idea of how much the PlayStation VR headset itself is going to cost, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised to have it come in at around that same price.
I would.
I wouldn't. It would be a little bit dumb of them, but, you know, they do have to cover their costs. Mm. And, that RNG is not cheap.
Not cheap.
Mm. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
I still don't see it coming in at higher than the cost of the platform.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be a big kick in the gut if it did cost more than the platform, but it would also be understandable too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I probably see them doing is doing a bundle. It's like, you know, you can get it for like 500 or $400 or $600. You can get the bundle with the PS4 included.
Mm.
Yeah. That'd probably be something that they might look into doing.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's going to be interesting to see how all this VR stuff plays out, because I've been looking forward to it for years.
Oh yeah.
And I think we're actually at a point now where it's going to start gaining some traction. And you know, smartphone VR with cardboard and whatnot is kind of cool, but it's not even playing in the same league.
Yeah.
And that's about all I got to say about Virtual Reality for now. On more PC-related news, the RMATE Pirates are having trouble with Just Cause 3 on the PC.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, seems like Just Cause 3 is using this encryption scheme by Denuvo. And it and FIFA 16 for PC are, I think, the only two titles that have used it, and they're also the only two titles that have not been cracked yet.
Yeah. Which means everybody else is probably going to jump on board, and that might be the end of PC pirating as we know it.
Yeah, at least in the AAA space, because those are the only people who would actually be able to afford that. Because it doesn't come cheap. You know, the idea of console-level security on the PC is definitely a good one, and I can see the appeal for big publishers that really want to lock things down. But it kind of goes, you know, against what the PC is really about, which is openness and being able to get in and hack things.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't see any indie developers, you know, picking that up. First of all, because that's probably going to cost them more than they'll make on their game entirely.
Right.
So, yeah. It is,
and a lot of PC developers seem to be putting the price point absolutely in the availability of most consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
So they've got that going for them too. It's not even worth the trouble sometimes to pirate some of the games.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Steam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, I don't pirate PC games anymore. There's just no reason for it.
No.
You know,
Steam really changed everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just wait a couple months, and you know, usually there'll be
a sale. For nearly free,
honestly, or Green Man Gaming and all the other people who will sell you know, a Steam code, and they're legit. There's several of them. Some of them are out of the country, but or at least out of the U.S.
Yeah, Green Man Gaming is great.
Yeah,
you can often get to like you know, brand new release games for like significantly discounted prices.
Yeah, I think
I don't check them nearly as often as I should.
Yeah.
I got ESO for like 17 a week or two after it was released.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. But great.
Yeah, and I saw Street Fighter V was going for like $39.
Wow.
Was that with a beta code?
Yeah, with the beta code.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, Green Man Gaming is definitely something to keep an eye on, because it's not they do sales quite often. It's so you always
sign up for their mailing list, man.
Yes. It's worth it. Yeah, or don't, because you might go broke anyway. Buying really, really inexpensive PC games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anyways, Pat, you want to take us to this next one here?
Apparently Final Fantasy 15 is closer than we thought.
Yeah.
Even in light of that whole weird Persona 5 poll that they did a little while ago, because Hajime Tabata is now saying that they're going to show it in its true form at a March reveal that will also include the global launch release date.
Right.
Yeah.
So cross your fingers.
Yeah, well, we knew that game was going to come out this year. You know, we're already starting to see listings for it. You can pre-order it.
Now it's starting to look like we might see it maybe by E3. I don't know. They're definitely in the final stretch.
Yeah. So if we're going to see Final Fantasy 15 in its true form in March, what have we been seeing so far?
Because, that's a good question.
Throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, because I haven't liked anything that we've seen of it so far. So
yeah,
there's a long way to go to get me interested in that game again. So
yeah,
good luck.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, just get me a copy of Setsuna and be done with it.
Yeah,
which we probably won't have to wait too long for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I see Setsuna coming out before Final Fantasy 15 does.
Yeah. And that will be
glorious. I see the second coming of Jesus coming before Final Fantasy 15 does.
Yeah. And don't forget, we've also got Kingdom Hearts 3 coming out this year. So.
Yep, there's that.
Yeah. It's going to be a good year for Square RPGs. Or Square Enix.
Square Games. Not sure how... how much I want to use the term RPGs on some of these, but it'll be a good year for Square Enix games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I really don't see, you know, Final Fantasy 15 as being, well, it is an RPG. It's just looks like it's got more action than I would particularly care for.
To me, it looks like an action game that has some vestiges of an RPG,
mm-hmm.
while not necessarily being one itself.
Yeah. Yeah, which is weird, because I'm also the kind of person that likes Diablo 3, like, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that game's pretty much all action, and yet somehow it pulls it off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a completely different style of play. You know, I think when you try to blend the you know, menu-driven battles and stuff into a game that's a little bit more action-oriented, I don't think it works quite as well.
Yeah.
It's like, just go one way or the other. So, that's how I've always looked at it. Just give me Setsuna of Sacrifice and Snow. And
yes.
let's just have that right now. Could we, like...
Please? Yeah. Then we won't even need to talk about Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah. It's like...
It comes out in Japan next month, so... We'll hear what they have to say.
Yeah. Everything I'm seeing about it, though, looks fantastic, and I want that in my hands.
I'm anticipating that it will do historically well in Famitsu.
Yeah.
And that'll be the first sign.
Yeah. And then Square Enix will realize, hey, maybe we should make more of these. That would be good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's what they set up Tokyo RPG Factory for.
Yeah. Yep.
And hopefully we see a few more announcements from them at E3 this year.
Yeah. Because
they're definitely living up to the factory part of their name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just keep churning them out, guys.
Yep.
We'll buy them.
Yep. They're printing money, or they will be.
Yeah. Maybe a Seiken Densetsu revisit. I wouldn't mind that.
One that isn't on a smartphone?
Yeah, one that I could actually play. Although with Duos, that's a little bit less of a problem than it used to be.
Yeah,
I tried that out. That is works shockingly well.
So when are you going to start Final Fantasy Dimensions?
When I have money. Yeah, Square Enix's mobile games are a little on the pricey side. Granted.
Dimensions not as much as it was when it launched.
Yeah.
I mean, when Dimensions launched, it was a game.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, how much did a... Because we bought them. How was it like 25? Like
$40.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 15 now.
Yeah.
It was a lot. And it took up a lot of space.
I think they cut out the episodic element to it and just released it as a game.
Yeah. So that will be interesting. Yeah, Brandon, you were the one that put this the next story in, Brandon?
Yep. Okay, so Mark Laidlaw, the guy who was basically the sole writer of all of the entire Half-Life series, has left the company. Laidlaw has been basically was with them pretty much from the beginning. I mean, he was there for almost 18 years. And he was already a pretty well-established author by the time he joined up with them. He published like 8 books. Two of which, you know, if you look closely when you open up, you know, Gordon Freeman's locker, two of them are in there. But yeah, basically he said he was wanting to go back doing his own stories, and he just left.
Yeah. Well, my thinking is, With all the time that he's been there and all the time that Half-Life 3 has supposedly either been in development or not, he's probably already written it.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think pretty much any work that he would have done for that game, he probably finished.
Along with episodes 1 and episode 2.
Yeah. And he's like, all right, that's it. I'm done.
Call me if you need me. I'll see you guys later.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think that's going to go. So, Half-Life 3 confirmed.
More or less.
Yeah. You could put Half-Life 3 confirmed on the end of any sentence nowadays, and it somehow makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I had grilled cheese for breakfast, Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Okay, maybe not that one.
My butt itches. Hey, Half-Life 3 confirmed.
That's somehow related to cheese, but you got to think about it for half a second.
Yeah.
Good night, kids.
We're here all week.
Okay, so
tip your waitress, try the veal.
Yep. So let's get to our main story of the week, because this one's super interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of went down last week, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it during the last show.
Which is probably a good thing, because it really does require a lot of backstory. It requires looking at it from several different angles.
First of all, you have to accept the fact that Bobby Kotick is not the Antichrist.
Yeah. getting to the gist of it, Activision just spent a lot of money acquiring MLG.
What they basically did was basically paid off all of MLG's debts and basically acquired them that way. So, yeah, that's
a lot of debt.
Yeah, really? Well, here's the thing about MLG. There's been a lot of shady shit going on with that company.
Uh-huh.
You know? And this is one of the things that Kotick has to overcome. It's like, because of all of that, MLG has a bit of an image problem.
Bit of one, yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking at, you know...
We're looking at a situation where Bobby Kotick is going to help a company with its image problem.
Yeah, that in itself is really, really weird.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, of the super evil empire corporations, Activision has been a little less evil than most lately.
That's true. And Kotick himself seems really ambitious about his plans for MLG. And there's no getting around that. He says he wants to build the ESPN of video games, which I'm all on board for because we've needed an ESPN for competitive gaming for quite some time.
That isn't ESPN.
Yeah.
If ESPN, or at least elements at ESPN, were more on board with what we're doing, then I would have absolutely no problem with it. But it's just proven so contentious and so divisive that it's not going to take on a timetable that I think gaming needs and really deserves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In order for it to like become the ESPN of video games, one of the first things that Kodak is going to have to do is rebrand.
Yeah.
They cannot and just stick with the MLG brand because
that is damaged goods.
Yeah. So they're going to need to rebrand that. Going to need to probably fire a lot of people, especially those people who have been doing those really, really crappy contracts that don't allow other players to, you know, have a life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. You know, Kodak is, I think, the kind of person, well, as far as organizational skills goes, that would understand those kind of issues and be able to set some standards.
Yeah. Certainly by now.
Yeah. I mean, a lot.
Translation being he's the only one heartless enough to purge of the unclean.
Yeah.
So
that's probably what he's going to feel like he's doing too.
Yeah.
And some history is needed to frame this correctly. Kodak himself, you know, he's had his name in the gaming news for, you know, in the past for reasons that aren't
he's the devil.
Yeah. He's not necessarily toxic now, though.
No, he's learned his lesson somewhat.
Just to get it out of the way, address the elephant in the room, yes, Bobby Kotick versus Infinity Ward was identical in every meaningful way to what just went down between Konami and Hideo Kojima. But something interesting has happened because he's remained in charge of the company all this time. And anytime you've heard about Activision problems, in the intervening years, they've been Activision problems. They haven't been Bobby Kotick problems.
Right.
He's been, he's really been nothing but a very capable steward of the company. The only thing that would give me some pause about this is if the plan was going in to sort of use it as a platform to push Activision games specifically. They just don't have the catalog to sustain something like this. But I think at the same time, they get that. And not only that, they're one of maybe, I would say, 4 or 5 third-party publishers in the entire industry who have the resources to make this work.
Yeah. I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit, though, because on the one point that they don't have the catalog to support it on their own, they do. They've got Call of Duty. They've got Diablo. They've got Hearthstone. They've got Heroes of the Storm. What else do they got?
Destiny.
World
of Warcraft.
Yeah, I don't really see that as being a competitive game, though.
But it's a brand.
They tried it.
Yeah. They got StarCraft, which is huge. So, you know, most of these are Blizzard titles, by the way, I should point out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Blizzard has been front and center in competitive gaming.
Yeah.
For almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they could do it, but it would be a very bad move for them to do it.
Yeah. I still think it would look, I guess, meager.
Yeah.
If they tried it.
And if your goal is to become the ESPN of games, then you really don't want to limit yourself to just your own catalog because there's a lot of very good competitive games that are made by other companies.
Mm-hmm. You have to open the door to Halo. You have to open the door to Street Fighter. You have to open the door, you know, maybe get some Battlefield in there. Yeah. And you know, that's another thing. They're going to have to not only open the door to other publishers' games, but that includes some of
their competitors,
some of their biggest competitors, some of their biggest rivals. And
they're going to have to let League of Legends in there.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But if they can do that, if they can be okay with that, this can be a really huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really could. And it's all in how it's executed. And what kind of form do you think this has to take to get your interest?
Well, for me, they have to get fighting games in there.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as, you know, presentation-wise, like, distribution-wise, what would it need to do to get you in?
That's a good question.
Well, for one thing, they'd have to make sure that they don't completely, like, dive headfirst into the more kitsch side of, you know, AAA gaming culture. You know, just, you know, tone down all the Mountain Dew and Doritos.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, if they take a big dude bro on it, I'm out.
Yeah. That if they do that, it's pretty much just poison.
Yeah, it'll kind of turn into, you know, remember that series on TV, The Ultimate Gamer?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that didn't.
They got to make sure that they don't turn into G4.
Yeah.
Is.
On the upside, one good thing did come out of that series.
Find the sweet spot of G4, if they're going to do it that way. But.
Yeah. Oh, G4 before it was bought by Comcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where they need to be. There was one good thing that came out of that Ultimate Gamer show, though. And that's, we all learn never to get into a car with Justin Wong.
Nope.
It's true.
Just don't ever do that unless you want to die.
Yeah.
I'm still amazed there were survivors.
How do you manage to crash in an empty parking lot? Somehow he managed.
That's a talent.
Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah.
That's nothing. Eddie Griffin was once in a super expensive Lamborghini by himself on an empty racetrack, and he managed to wreck that thing.
Yeah.
So that's not hard to convince me.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the whole, though, I think, yeah, they got to avoid the dude bro complex. They got to get it everywhere.
They can't sign up for just cable and satellite. You have to be able to tune in online.
Yeah. You know, start with Twitch, since that's a really established platform. You can do it there. And get maybe get a special app or something on the consoles and the phones and.
Yep.
Yeah, just put it in front of people and show that the product is worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
And show the world how great competitive gaming is, because it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It sells itself if you can just get somebody to look into it out of curiosity, in passing, you'll create fans for life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what the genre is.
Yeah, and that's one of the really awesome things about going to the Twitch main site is you never know what you're going to see right there.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
It's like you just go there and just some random stream starts showing up. It could either be a major event, which is, you know, they'll usually have those front and center, like for E3 or Evo or whatnot. They'll be playing right away, so you don't have to go very far to find them. But sometimes you just find some esoteric streamers who just have a really interesting personality that you might gel with, and you know, you become a fan. Yep. So that's kind of what needs to happen here.
I think they can do it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope
they need to sign the right announcers for the right genres.
Yeah. What do you guys think about a real names policy, though?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, I come from the early days of the fighting game community that had a de facto real names policy for years.
Mm-hmm.
Players weren't really known by screen names until, you know, sort of Xbox Live came around and we started knowing players primarily that way. Up until then, it was pretty much real names only.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm all for it. I think it's a good system.
Yeah. Because, yeah, that might be a requirement of this whole network that they're going for that would probably go a long way to legitimizing it. Because, you know, if you got some people who are using their real names and some people using screen names, which is one of the big gripes I have about Evo, is it just feels weird.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So either go full all screen names or go real names. Just have some consistency. That's my thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else? You, Teresa, Brandon?
Not really. I would perhaps they should offer some, I don't want to say educational material, but, you know, dude, some of the things about old G4 I loved was some of the stuff they would do about the history of gaming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that Icon series was fantastic. Yeah. You know, bring that, do that.
Yeah.
Because you got a bunch of great material you can do there.
Maybe even look into resurrecting some of those shows.
Yeah.
See about getting the rights.
You could, but it'd be really, I don't want to see X-Play come back, to be honest. Because unless Adam Sessler is there, it's just not worth watching.
You're choking on that one.
Oh, no comment.
But, you know, I could see them hiring, at least he's not
Bill Sindelar.
Yeah. But I could see them hiring a couple of guys like, Tommy Tallarico and Victor Lucas.
Yeah.
You know, I think those guys would be perfect for it because they do take the medium seriously, mm-hmm. but they're not stiff.
Yeah.
You know.
And they're invested in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although Tommy Tallarico's having a lot of fun with his video games live tours, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, might be hard to pull him away from that.
It's true.
Yeah. If you've not gone to see one of those, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If one ever comes to Chicago, Teresa, take the kids. It's fantastic.
I'm gonna find out if it's gonna be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, Tommy himself is just a real character.
Yeah. 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 All right. So. That pretty much closes out the main discussion stories of the week.
Portion of the show.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time last week talking about what 2016 is going to be like in gaming, and there was one aspect of that that we kind of missed, and that was us, Smashpad, in 2016. It's not going to be just the site content and Day Zero update and Let's Weekend. We're definitely looking into expanding. There ideas for podcasts are being tossed around. Got a couple of possibilities in the works, and that's all they are right now. Just names and ideas being mulled over. One that I had in mind was called Eris Dies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just open and open discussion of, you know, the complete stories of specific games, complete with spoilers and everything. And, you know, I think it's kind of a shame that there are so many great stories in games and, you know, and the whole sort of no spoilers, almost culture at this point has made it difficult to discuss these stories openly. Yeah. And so,
especially when it's like games like Undertale, where like a whole part of the appeal of the game is that you have to kind of go in blind.
Yeah.
And so, this is something that we'd be doing maybe not on a weekly basis, maybe not on a set timetable, but as it's warranted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would just be a bunch of us who have played through a certain game, sitting down and discussing various parts of it. You know, the storyline as a whole, or so on and so forth. But with the understanding that, you know, everyone at this discussion has played the entire game, and, mm-hmm. you know, if you really don't want it spoiled for you, you might want to skip the episode.
Yeah.
So that's one that we could do. Another one that I've personally wanted to launch here for a little while now is a fighting game centric show, of course. Just discussing games in development, events that have happened, tournament results.
I bet for a good premiere episode for that would be just sort of an overall discussion on the history of fighting games.
Oh, that'd be great.
Especially, you know, and that's going to involve also a lot, a good deal of sort of how of the arcade culture that used to be. Because let's be honest, part of the big reason that fighting games were so successful in the 90s were the arcades.
Yeah. Yep. It was inherently social and just a great atmosphere. And, you know, maybe have players on, have developers on to, you know, to discuss what they're up to, and, you know, hopefully make something consistent out of that. Mm-hmm. Not entirely sure when that one would be good to go, but I think out of all the things that are on the drawing board, it is the closest to possibly coming to fruition. And then another one that would also utilize a rotation of hosts instead of a regular group would be something that I'm tentatively calling Smash Pad Versus, which would just be a straight up debate show depicting conflicting schools of thought across various topics in gaming. Like for the purposes of examples, you could take a Final Fantasy VII remake show and have the ATB versus action discussion.
Yeah.
Or you could have Super Mario Brothers 3 versus Super Mario World and just discuss the key points of these topics, and if not reach a conclusion, then at least frame the topic really well for whoever's listening.
Yeah.
And so that's just a few examples that of what we could be doing here in the coming months. Obviously more ideas are possible, more shows are possible. It just depends on how things go. And mm-hmm. so another thing I wanted to bring up is the imminent return of 15 minutes of game. This is a long time coming. I really wanted to do that shortly after E3 last year. That didn't happen. But more episodes are being worked on, and you might even see the return before we're back here next week to do the next episode of the Day Zero update.
Yeah.
I can hope at least.
Yeah.
One thing that is kind of necessary at this point is we need to launch a Patreon, honestly. It's difficult, you know. Phil's been paying for the Smash Pad website out of pocket for the last few years now.
Yeah, a couple of years now.
Yeah, that's becoming increasingly difficult. Another thing is having more money on hand means more time for us, and more time inherently means more content. Mm. talking about some of these podcast ideas that we're kicking around, having a flow of income coming into the site, coming into the team, means maybe being able to scale down our investments in our day jobs a little bit, at least. And that's all time that can go into producing content. It can, it might lead to me personally not passing out during Let's Weekend.
Yes.
But, I'm definitely at the point where I would like to be able to do Smash Pad for a living. And,
because eventually Walmart just wears down on you.
It chips away at the soul. I'm not going to lie.
At this point, he's dead inside.
Mm. Well, I was dead inside before I even got there, but this didn't make it any better. But yeah, and also another thing that would definitely cover is equipment, and that's a big thing. Having more and having better equipment allows us to improve the quality and the range of our content. So better equipment, better microphones, so it doesn't sound like we're talking to you through pillows.
Yeah, because what a lot of people don't realize is that Brandon actually sounds like Barry White.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, the microphone just really doesn't pick that up. So it'd be great to finally hear the full range of Brandon's amazing voice.
That's enough. Can't get enough of your love, baby. Better computers means better video captures. It would enable us, by and large, to have more time to create content and to have better equipment with which to deliver that content. Yeah. And that's something that we want to be able to do for you all, in the coming year. So, pretty soon
we'll probably launch that pretty soon, and hopefully we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I'm not really expecting it to make a huge impact at first, but
hey, the money helps.
It does. And if it can enable us to bring you a better Smash Pad, a better selection of content in the coming year. That's
For just $5 a day.
I wouldn't go that far.
You can adopt game industry writer.
Oh, man. Actually, I am really, really surprised that nobody has done that yet.
Oh. Corner of the market, Phil.
Oh, we should totally do that.
So that would give us an opportunity to once again, like I said, improve the range and the quality of our content while also continuing to follow the current upward trajectory that we're already on. Word of mouth has been very good for us. It seems like every week we're just finding more and more impressive numbers relating to our podcast or even our site content. This January has already been our best month on record.
Yep.
That happened within days of the month starting.
Yeah.
And so this is a really exciting time for Smash Pad, and even as we're doing, we're on an unprecedented upward trajectory, and hopefully we can sustain that.
And a good sign of that upward trajectory,
yeah,
is the last major announcement we've got.
Yes. So if you enjoyed the last show of 2015, where we had Richard Wood from Stormcloud Games to talk about Brutal, more guests are coming. You want to make the announcement there, Phil?
So if you've read our Game of the Year feature, you'll know that our number one Game of the Year was Axiom Verge.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think some people had questions about that, but I feel like Axiom Verge was a very well-deserving game of a game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we've got Dan Edelman, who's a very prominent biz dev guy right now. He's been at Microsoft, he's been with Nintendo, and now he's handling biz development for independent publishers, you know, independent developers, rather. And one of those developers, Tom Happ, the creator of Axiom Verge.
The sole creator of Axiom Verge. We need to...
Yep. So in 2 weeks...
One person on the team.
Yeah. In 2 weeks, we will have both Dan and Tom on the show, and it's shaping up. It's going to be pretty darn fun, I'd say. We may not even do any news stories that week, because you know we're gonna have two great guests on the show. I think we'll probably just end up doing a full on interview. It depends on what happens as mm-hmm. far as the news goes.
Yeah,
but yeah,
just an interview, and then maybe just shoot the shit for a little while.
Yeah. So yeah, good things happening at Smashpad, and if things continue, maybe we'll get more guests. And one thing I've discovered is you have a better chance of getting guests if you just ask nicely.
Yeah.
Man, people seem to respond to that and not send naked pictures, although I'll just stop that right there. Anyways. So that's pretty much it for this week. A lot of good stuff happening at Smashpad, and I'm really thrilled about the trajectory of the site. I'm going to have a lot of work to do because I think I need to do some rejiggering of the site layout, if not redo the entire site entirely.
And we're kind of due for that, aren't we?
Yeah, so I'm going
to starting to look a little 2007-ish.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, it is responsive at least, so if you're going...
It functions.
Yeah, if you go to it on a phone, it won't look like crap, so there's that. But, yeah, maybe a little spring cleaning wouldn't be a bad idea. Anyways. So I guess we'll call it a week, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, a special thanks to our listeners who have stuck with us this far.
Yeah. And to all the new folks who are just joining us.
Absolutely.
We really do appreciate it.
To quote a very great localization house / publisher, we are nothing without you.
Yep. Yeah. And on that bombshell, I'm Filippo D'Anolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sannon.
Good night, everybody.